So we'll get going. Good afternoon, good evening. Thanks for joining us at this last session of the day on Thursday. I appreciate you coming by. They have the Ask the Experts is coming up, otherwise known as Stump the Geeks. That's going to be after this session, so thanks for hanging in there. My name is Brian Benz. I work for Microsoft Open Technologies. We are a wholly owned subsidiary of Microsoft, and we specialize in enabling open source and other technologies such as Oracle and IBM and a few other things I'll talk about today on Azure and on devices as well. And with me is Luis Carlos Vargas Herring from the SQL Server team. And he'll be showing you some specifics about how SQL Server can be deployed in different scenarios. So today we're going to be talking about virtual machine deployment scenarios. So I'm going to show you different ways of deploying applications. How many people here are actually working on, who actually have cloud deployments already? Okay, just a few. Okay. And how many people here are working with big workloads, like, you know, database, like Oracle, SQL Server? Other applications that they are looking to move to the cloud. Is that just a few? Okay. All right, so I'm going to start with a little bit of a introduction to Azure. First, we have a housekeeping item here. Oops, clicking the wrong mouse. So as I mentioned, the Stump the Geeks, I mean the Ask the Experts, is right after this session. We finish at 6:15, 6:30 is that in Hall 5, and there's snacks and food served. Actually, it's kind of funny, in the speaker room today, just now, around 3 o'clock, they rolled out beer and wine and snacks, sandwiches and things. This is something that doesn't happen in North America, probably for a good thing. I didn't have any. I'm sticking to coffee because of the jet lag. So, so a little bit about Azure. A lot of people have probably already seen this slide or something similar. But just want to tell you a little bit. So the idea here, today we're only going to be talking about the stack second to your left. But the idea here is in the cloud, we have packaged software that's on-premise. Basically everything there that you manage yourself. You buy the hardware, you set up the servers, you manage the OS, you manage the applications, you manage the network. Infrastructure as a service is a different animal, and that's what we're going to talk about today. In the cloud, infrastructure as a service is your server. Microsoft manages virtualization of that server. They manage the storage and the networking behind the scenes, the actual physical boxes. You manage your operating system, any middleware you're running, any runtime, any data or applications. The other options we have is our platform as a service, what we call cloud service. And I'll show you a little demo of this later. Platform as a service, you manage your applications and your data, and everything from the OS down is managed by Azure. And then software as a service, you basically put something out on the cloud, but you really just manage the application itself. You can change some configuration settings and you can put your own code on it. Good examples are WordPress, Joomla, Drupal, content management systems that build modern websites. Software as a service is used for those. So it's just a little bit about the applications there. So application scenarios. Websites, as I mentioned, are used for simple applications that you don't want to manage yourself or configure yourself except for the most basic settings. Cloud services are used for multi-tier applications. Cloud services run on Windows. Anything that requires sort of advanced administration, anything you have in your operation right now that runs on Windows, cloud services is a good fit for that. Virtual machines. One of the differences between virtual machines and cloud services is virtual machines. You can run Linux. We have 4 endorsed flavors of Linux. And they're used for more advanced applications. So if you have any Linux-based operations that you're running, Linux is a good, or information, infrastructure as a service is good for that. Here's the 4 flavors of, actually the 5 flavors of Linux that we manage. Ubuntu, CentOS, OpenSUSE, and SUSE Enterprise, and Oracle Linux. And of course, we have Windows Server 2008 and 2012 on infrastructure as a service as well. So these are just like your regular servers. You can set them up, you can run them. Let me show you, before we get into that, let me switch over here. Go into the actual manager's portal. So if you're going to set up a new virtual machine, all you have to do, this is the Microsoft Azure portal, all items. This is my own dev account, which I'll show you a bit more of later. I just go compute virtual machine, and I can do a quick create. It's going to create something, or I can go from gallery. And our virtual machine gallery has a number of different options. Of course, we have Windows Server. You also have SharePoint servers, SQL Server, BizTalk, Visual Studio. That's the Visual Studio option there. Here's the Linux options, Ubuntu. We have the CentOS-based OpenLogic 6.5 and 7. We have SUSE, Oracle Linux. Actually, we have several options for Oracle. We have Oracle Database, WebLogic Server, and also Java images that you can use as well. There's some differences in those. Instead of having to set up your own server image for Oracle, and this is an interesting case, let's say you have an Oracle Database you want to set up. You have two different options. You can use one of our license-included images. The license-included images themselves you get charged by the minute for the license as an add-on to your actual application. So, for example, if you have Azure credits in your enterprise and you want to use Oracle, but you don't have an Oracle license, you can go in here. Your Azure credits will apply to the compute and the storage, but the Azure license for that Oracle image will be charged separately. If you have an Oracle license on-premise that you're not using and you want to move out to the cloud, you can do that on Linux or Windows by setting up an infrastructure as a service virtual machine. You set up the virtual machine itself. You could load up your own Linux, or you can use one of our Linux images, which are not license included. Those are bring your own license. And you can just use the, for example, if you have Azure credits, you can use those credits towards compute and storage, and you're required to manage your own license. Some late breaking news. For those of you who may not have seen this in the keynote, this is the new portal for Azure. So what you were looking at before was the old dashboard. Now we're looking at the new portal. And over here in the virtual machines, I do a search for IBM. So we have some new images for DB2, WebSphere, and IBM MQ. These are license included images, again, running on Windows. And once again, if you wanted to run a large workload on an IBM-supported application, you can do that through setting up your own infrastructure as a service VM and then loading the software on yourself and using it just like you would on-prem with Linux or Windows. Another option I wanted to show you for deploying, over here on the right, you'll notice this VM Depot row. Well, let me show you what that is. VM Depot. S Open Tech. So vmdepot.msopentech.com is something that Microsoft Open Technologies has built. And it's a marketplace for Linux images. It's all Linux, all open source. There's no licenses involved here unless you have an arrangement with the vendor who's provided the image. There's over 1,000 images that you can use straight from here to quick start an application deployment that you might have on Azure. So let's say, for example, you wanted to run, let's see, MongoDB. So I'm just picking MongoDB. It's popular NoSQL application. There's a MeanStack. So MeanStack is actually a great example for VM Depot. So MeanStack is MongoDB, Express.js, AngularJS, and Node.js. It's an application stack that you can use. MongoDB is what you use for storage on the back end. The EAN part of the mean you use for actually building your applications or supporting an application that someone else built. Now, to roll this out, if you wanted to set up a virtual machine on Azure or on-premise to manage Mean, you'd have to go out to MongoDB, download their MongoDB Community Edition, download ExpressJS, Apache Server, AngularJS, Git, and Node.js. You'd have to go out and get all those packages. And then you have to install them one by one in the correct order and test them all to make sure everything's working together. Instead, you can just go out to VM Depot, and we've already packaged this. Our partner Bitnami, actually, in this case, has packaged this for you. So all you have to do is say create virtual machine. Whoops, hold on. That's actually going to do something else. But if I select the actual Mean stack item, I click here, I choose a region, one of the 19 regions we have, and what this does is it actually creates a script for me that I can use. And this script is written in a PowerShell-based application tool that we've built called CLI, the command line interface. The command line interface itself runs on Mac, Linux, or Windows, so you don't actually have to use a Windows client for this. I'll show you a little bit more about that later. But for now, you can just see you have the script here that you can use to deploy this, and you can reuse this. So you can cut and paste this into a command line if you have the CLI installed, and I'll talk about that in a bit. And once you have the CLI installed, this will run. You fill in your own subscription information, your username and password, and a few other options, and you can actually deploy this. You can also save it and run it later. Let me go back into the new portal. Now, I mentioned over here on the side, you see the VM Depot community images. It's the same idea here. I can actually search through these if I find the mean stack image. And this is even easier now. You don't need to worry about the script anymore. You're already in your subscription in the new Azure portal. And you can just click here and create whatever image you want in a new virtual machine on Azure. And these are all going to be, once again, on Linux. They're all free. The other option you have for this, by the way, you can actually publish your own images if you want to. Go back. If you have an image that you want to share, if you're a vendor, you have some open source Linux-based software that you want to share, you can publish for free. You sign in to the VM Depot website. You package these up as Hyper-V packages, and you can share these on VM Depot. So that's just a little aside on things you can do. Oops, actually. There we go. So just a few options there. So I just want to show you how you can get kickstarted on building a VM image without having to build one from scratch. But there's some other options as well. The top applications patterns that you have, of course, for development, for actually deployment, sorry, not development. Deployment is one of the most frequent use cases we see is developing and testing in Azure. So developing and testing software in Azure. Lifting and shifting production applications, building them out. Extending your infrastructure. So if you have an application already on-premise and you want to move it out to the cloud just for backup, for disaster recovery, or to if you have a situation where your software actually supports hybrid topologies and you want to actually have a month-end burst handled by the cloud, you can do that as well. And you know, just to bring things into cloud scale, we have all these application locations now that you can use. So if you have an application that's running on the west coast of the U.S., and you find that you have a lot of users from Asia and they're having a lot of latency problems, you could roll out a node of your application on the cloud in Japan quickly and hopefully solve those latency issues through having a local physical location for your users. So, as I mentioned before, so I showed you how you can actually jumpstart with those images that we have, the gallery images, the VM Depot images. Now, what if you just have something on-premise, you've already packaged, you've got a Oracle application or a SQL Server application that talks to a middleware application that has a .NET client. You've got all that working on site. How do you actually package that up and deliver it out to the web? At a high level, I'll go into a high level. I'm going to show you some examples later. But at a high level, basically, you use Hyper-V. You can package that up from VMware, a competitor cloud like Amazon, or if you have something hosted elsewhere on just a co-location, package those up as Hyper-V. Anything you can put on Hyper-V, you can actually put out on Azure. And by the way, it doesn't have to be the versions of Linux that I showed you. It could be another version of Linux. Debian is a good example of the sort of thing you can do. If you can fit it on a Hyper-V and it's running on a Hyper-V on your local application environment, chances are it's going to run on Azure as well. So you package things up. That's one scenario. Once you've got it packaged up as a Hyper-V, you can move it to Azure. Infrastructure as a service, straight into a VM. You can also move as a live migration. You can move actual working Hyper-V images to Azure as well, or any host that supports Hyper-V. So as I mentioned before, the deployment options you've got for extending your Windows application environment, you can use System Center and TFS, all the Windows applications that you're used to. You can use those on Azure as well. You can use a single pane of glass to manage all of the different cloud nodes that you have. And the most typical, as I said, the scenario for typical application deployment is for dev and test. That's a good way to start. So when you're actually building out a new version of your software, you can actually deliver that out to the cloud versus an on-prem solution, and that's one way to move to the cloud. You've actually got your next version of that application running on the cloud. You can just direct users to that. It's a good way to go. You can also, as I mentioned, extend data center capabilities and spin up VMs really easily. And I'll show you some examples of that. So dev test, just to drive that home. So obviously, if you need a new server, this is where we have a lot of customers using dev test in the cloud. They need to build a new server for testing their new application. They need something more powerful than they have right now, or they just have some teams maybe internationally that are working that are testing the limits of the current infrastructure on-prem. What you can do with that is put up a virtual machine on the cloud, move your application out. And once you've moved your application out there, you've got the opportunity to test different versions of the application on different operating systems really easily by switching different operating systems. You can also test capacity, so you can try out different configurations. Let's see what happens if we increase RAM. Let's see what happens if we increase disk. Are we getting better performance if we set up a virtual network between these two machines and things like that? So there's a lot of different options that you have on the cloud that you don't have on-prem when you're doing dev and test. So just a quick introduction to Azure VMs as well. So basically, you've got your enterprise, you've got your clients, you've got some sort of load balancer, typically in an application. You've got virtual machines here, and you've got a hypervisor that's actually linking those virtual machines to storage. That's Azure VMs in a nutshell. You also have, as I mentioned before, you've got the gallery here, but you've also got the VM Depot image options, aside from the main Azure gallery, to be able to deploy out to a VM. So you can set up clusters. You can set up clusters in different data centers. You can set up Azure servers to serve those clusters from a certain data center. We've got geo-replication, geolocation. I'll get into the drill down of the details of this in a little bit as well. One thing to know, I only saw a few hands up, so one of the terminologies that you're going to find on the cloud is web roles and worker roles. And it's really nothing more than the web role has a web interface, so usually port 80 or 443 open, accessible out to the web. and it has a web server running on it. Worker roles are that same thing without the web access. So worker roles are things you use for database applications. You might have something that you're using to extend your on-premise that doesn't need a web server. Those things are called worker roles. So notice here, there's multiple virtual machines inside each one of these roles. So the dotted line there is identifying the role. So the web role here would be something that goes out to the web. You can have multiple instances of virtual machines running, all put together, and it looks like a single web interface to a customer. Whereas the worker role is behind the scenes, it can also have multiple instances. And it still looks like a single instance, but you use that for data crunch and just to expand capabilities, backup, for example, or just for performance, adding another server. So cloud services with virtual machines, that's the point I just made a minute ago. So you have multiple virtual machines in one cloud service, could be a web role or a worker role. And this is really what we're going for with Azure. This basic topology is what we're looking at. So over here, we've got the internet, we've got customers. They're going in through the web itself, through web roles. This is a single web role with four instances. And in this case, we've got a worker role in the back here with Oracle, IBM, SQL Server, a NoSQL database, something else in that worker role running. There could be multiple instances of that database server running as one single service, one single cloud service called a worker role. And over here, we've got another cloud service. This is not a worker role, though. This is Active Directory or some kind of authentication service. And we've got our VPN tunnel that's going into your enterprise. And the enterprise is feeding data out to the worker role, which is actually feeding data out to the web. So this is sort of the big picture slide that covers most of the needs of a typical enterprise when they're building out an application. And I'll talk about each one of these. So scripting capabilities. I showed you earlier with the VM Depot, I showed you that line of script. We have, for scripting capabilities, let me switch over here, PowerShell. How many people are familiar with PowerShell here? All right, everybody, okay. So the CLI, how many people are familiar with the CLI, the command line interface? Okay, good. This is something to know. So the CLI is something, if you're used to PowerShell, you're going to get used to this in about 5 minutes. It's just a new vocabulary in the same format. And I'll show you how it works. So let's see here. If you go to Azure, not that one. I have too many tabs open. If you go to, let's just go here. I can't believe it. I'm going to have to start a new tab for this. Azure downloads. So if you go here, we have a number of SDKs of interest to developers for developing things. But down here, when you scroll down, Windows PowerShell, everybody's familiar with that. Of course, we have the Azure command line interface. Now, the command line interface works with, let me zoom in for those of you in the back. It works with Windows, Mac, or Linux. It runs on Node.js, and you install it. Once you've installed it, you've got the capability to control Azure from a command line. And what can you do with that? All kinds of things, actually. You can create servers. You can create virtual networks. You can set up affinity groups, which link networks together, and a few other things as well. So once you've downloaded this, you've got all that capability. You've got provisioning, removal, reboot, start, import and export. And I'm going to show you an example of this in a second. So you've also got automation. So those of you who may have heard of Azure Automation, it's a way to schedule things and put in breakpoints even in your actual scripting. The command line interface works with Azure Operations, Azure Automation, so you set up a script using the CLI vocabulary. Azure Automation, then you can tell Azure Automation, run this script at a certain time. You can also set up breakpoints in there. So for whatever reason, if you created a VM and at that point in your script something fails, you can stop the script at that point. You also have the ability to restart the script, but don't create that VM again. There's a certain workflow you can actually build into Azure Automation. So Azure Automation on top of scripts is very powerful, very useful stuff. But there is actually a rich vocabulary in the CLI itself that allows you to do things much like what I just described. So let me show you that right now. So I've got a demo here. A few hours ago, I ran a script on my machine. I was in the speaker lounge there, and it fired up an application server for me that's WebLogic. And the reason why I picked WebLogic is because it's a pretty good demo. It shows you how you can actually build a multi-tier application. So this one has one admin node in WebLogic, which is controlling three actual nodes in a cluster. And that cluster has failover, round robin. It actually has round robin load balancing and failover. So, and that's all controlled within WebLogic. Now, on top of that, you can put something like a traffic manager from Azure to actually route you depending on three different options. You can have that for failover as well. You can have that for geolocation, so you can set up different nodes of this application. So it's a three-node cluster. You can have multiple instances of those three-node clusters in different locations around the world. Traffic Manager will manage the web traffic that comes in from a single URL, and then WebLogic manages the traffic that comes into a specific instance, a specific node. And that node is a virtual node with three different servers underneath it. So it's a nice demo here. Now let me show you. If we run this, you see it just says WLS node 2. This is one of the nodes that I'm running, WLS node 2. And it's just one node. So if I go over here to the actual application itself, and boy, I really have to limit my number of. There we go. These are the servers themselves. I'm going to fire up a second server. So the point is here, I'm in WebLogic. I'm not in Azure. I'm managing Azure virtual machines. These servers here, let me go back to this, servers. These servers, each one of these server names maps to a actual Azure virtual machine, but I'm managing the application that's running on top of that Azure virtual machine. I'm not firing up, when I say start, when I hit that button, it's not firing up the Azure virtual machine, that's already running. It's just running the WebLogic server on top of that Azure virtual machine. So now, hopefully, usually takes a few seconds, I can go back to this application, and when I hit this, it's not there yet. Anyway, it's probably still starting up. But eventually, oh, there we go. I think it's probably going to do it now. No. Well, this is a good demo. It should start up any second now. And you should say CWS node 3 there every once in a while. Anyway, for now, I'll get back to this. I'll show you the actual script. So some of you at the back, font. For those of you at the back, I'll just make this a little bigger. So here's a script I used to fire this up. So I'm just sitting in the speaker room, and I said, you know, I'll set up this demo for this session. I was like 2 p.m. And I'll run through what this does. But this is a PowerShell script using the CLI that actually set up all those servers for me. And actually, let me show you the actual servers before we get to that. Okay. So if I go here, so if I go into virtual machines in my dashboard, here's the actual servers. WLS admin is the administration server that controls all the different nodes there. So four virtual machines, admin server, and then node 1, 2, and 3, and they're all running here. And those are controlled through a cloud service. When I click on cloud services, you can see my cluster here. And these are the endpoints for that cluster. So WLS admin is the first one. And then I've got two different ports open for the other three nodes. And the reason for that is because we're accessing some disks on the back end. So we actually have three disks. One disk each corresponds to each one of those nodes. There's a web interface and there's a database interface to connect to the node. So different ports, two ports per node. WLS admin only needs one port, which is the WebLogic control port 47001. So let me show you how that script set all this up for me. So the first thing we do, we create a storage account. The reason why I have the storage account, I showed you earlier how you package things up and put them into Azure as a VHD. In this case, what I did is I packaged up a working WebLogic app on my laptop, and each one of those nodes I packaged as a separate VHD, and I put them in a storage account out of my subscription on Azure. So I have four blobs out there that are VHDs that are a template of what I want to deploy out to Azure. So that's the first step. Take your package, put it onto Azure, and by Azure we mean put it into a storage account. And once you have it in the storage account, you can deploy it from there. So here's the storage account name. Location, this is what I'm going to set up. If I want to have a location, depending on what location I want, anywhere in the world that's an Azure location, the source storage account is called DemoMonkey. It's just where we're actually putting things. And the source demo folder is WebLogic. So in a storage account, you can create folders just like you would in a file system. In this case, I'm just telling the script where to find the actual images that I want it to deploy out to Azure. So the next thing here, I set up the destination. I have to get a storage account key, some subscription information. There's some security built in here. And then I go out and get my blobs. So I go out and grab these blobs, and I put them into storage. And here's where I actually deploy these out to Azure. So I take a storage blob. I define where that actual location is going to be. Let's go back to this side. Next thing I do, I copy the blobs from the blob I'm going to the actual virtual machine that I want to deploy it to. And if you notice here, it says wait for complete. The reason why we wait for complete is we want to make sure each one of these blobs is actually starting up the virtual machine before we create an affinity group. Affinity group is something that says, it tells Azure, don't spray these images all over your data center. Put them in a location that is built for high performance. So in other words, it's going to put them on the same rack in an application, in a server rack. It's basically going to take them and put them as close physically together as possible for better performance. So then we want to create a virtual network. Let me just show you that. If we go back over to this, to what we had. Where is it? Okay. So we go over here. If you'll notice, each one of the VMs that I created, the virtual machine, that's websites, virtual machine. So I look at each one of these nodes, and you see the URL to get to this node is wlscluster-bbenz.cloudapp.net. It's the same for all three of those nodes. So how do we actually set that up? Through a virtual network. So what we want to do is we want to set up a virtual network that uses all of these different locations as a single location. So to the web, it looks like one place, but there's actually three nodes that we're working with through this virtual network. Then you create Azure disks. Each one of these Azure disks connects to an Azure virtual machine. We add the Azure disks to each one of those virtual machines. And Then we create the base image. Inside of each one of the VMs, so the base image is the admin image that we have. The admin server VM here, we create that. It's a pretty straightforward copy from blob to a virtual machine using all of the pieces that we just built, the virtual network, the affinity group, and the blobs. And the next thing we want to do, and this is a little more complicated, we create the first, second, and third node VMs. And when you do that, if you notice here, for each one of these, there's a wait for boot command. That means it's going to create the VM, and it's going to start it up. And it's going to wait for boot, and it's going to stop this whole script if it didn't work. The next thing we do is we go in and we add nodes 1, 2, and 3. Here's the second node and the third node. Then there's inside of each node, I'm just skipping over the gateway here. Inside of each node, we have to perform some functions to get WebLogic working on that machine. We actually want to fire up the server and try it out. And if it works, shut it down. So that's what this script does. So we just fired up three nodes. We fired up each one of those. We go in through a remote session, and we start the actual WebLogic server. And then we actually shut down the WebLogic server, put it in a shutdown state, so we know it's working. So what we did here, basically in the script, is we created all those networks. We created all the virtual machines. Then we started up each virtual machine and then shut it down again. And we put that in a state where we're waiting for it. So let me go back to the actual application again. Hold on. Too many screens. There it is. So let's see if this is working now. So once in a while when I click there, it should go to 3, hopefully. That's not. Okay, I guess I'm not fast enough with my clicking. But usually what happens is it'll go to 3. If we actually look at the dashboard here, it should be running. Oh, it says starting. Yeah. So we've got two servers running, so it should actually be working on 2 and 3. But the point is here, you get the idea, it's running, and we fired up a second server, but all three of those servers would generally be running. If one of the servers goes down, as you can see here, there is one that has a little bit of a problem for shutting down, it's going to work with the other servers because, as I mentioned before, we have a cluster set up inside the server, and that's configured by WebLogic, not by us, so it's not part of that script. But if we go into the cluster itself, we've got a cluster set up, and this is part of the VHD that I created and put in blob storage, ready to be deployed. I determined that this one should be round robin. There's different other options for managing, and this is the WebLogic configuration for traffic managing traffic, not the Azure configuration. So as I mentioned before, you can actually create and manage the different nodes inside a WebLogic server or any other application server you've got that has its own load balancing mechanism. And then on top of that, you can have multiple nodes of these multi-node applications running, and those could be load balanced through something like Traffic Manager on Azure. So it's a fairly complicated deployment scenario that you might want to build. It's got web interface, it's got a back-end interface, and you can have multi-level traffic management too. So the disks and images, just want to go through this real quick. So the disks and images themselves, you've got a base OS, you've got disks that are running. You can have disks that you attach to a VM, but there are default disks that come with it as well. When you're moving applications, as I mentioned before, you can package them up as a VHD that you've got on premise. So you've got an application that you're using right now. everything's working perfectly, you need it to be there exactly the same on the cloud. You can package it up as a VHD, you can put it on the cloud. One of the cool things about Azure is you can take that VHD from the cloud and put it back on a local machine as well, anything that supports VHD. If you have your own deployment that you've built in the cloud, so you've actually taken an application on-premise, you've built it on the cloud with some special configurations for performance, yeah, just like I showed you with WebLogic. Maybe you've got some load balancing inside your application, some load balancing outside your application based on Azure. You've got all that built now. You can actually record that as well through a capture on a VHD. And you can, I'll show you that real quick. When you go into a VHD itself, if you notice down here, this capture button, I can actually capture any virtual machine that I have on Azure just by hitting that button and saving it. And it's going to save it in a storage account. It's going to save it in a blob. And then I can deploy it just like I showed you in that script. You can do a manual deployment, or you can write scripts to do that as well. So you can package those up and deploy them to the cloud as well. Or you can actually take that and package it and deploy it locally as well. So that's showing you images, VM images in the cloud that I just talked about, hitting that capture button. You can also do that through PowerShell, through the CLI. So you customize that VHD, you built everything in the cloud, and you can save it that way. So service level agreements, real quick. If you're using multiple locations, we guarantee 99.95% uptime. And how do we do that? Through fault and update domains. So fault domains means anytime you put an application as a virtual machine on Azure, it automatically puts three locations of that virtual machine inside data centers in that region. They could be physical buildings that are different in different buildings, or it can be physical locations inside the same building, but it's always in that one region. You also have geo-replication, but that's separate. That's not a service that's done behind the scenes transparently like this service is. You also have update domains. What are update domains? Let's say you want to update your operating system, because you're working with IaaS, you have to manage your own operating system here. Or let's say you want to increase storage, or you want to increase RAM. You can do that through update domains, and you can specify certain update domains that you want to manage. By default, I think it's two. And what happens there is when you're creating the update domains themselves, you've got multiple instances here. You've got your rack. So I mentioned affinity groups. So you might have a rack that has different instances, your web role and your worker role in them. The fault domain itself will split those off into at least three instances inside the data center. Then when you do updates, you actually specify, I want to increase my storage in this particular VM. Behind the scenes, Azure is going to update each one of these locations separately. And just to show you the different update domains again, if you have, for example, MySQL or some other database, it's going to update this one first. You see UD1 there. And then it's going to update UD2, and if anything fails, you can back that out. But the idea here is the update domains themselves are managed so that systems are always running and they're always up. So VM disks, as I mentioned before, we got VM disks. You've got persistent storage. You've got your hard disk drive, which is just like a hard disk drive on your Windows server now or Linux. You've also got temporary storage, which is used for caching and other things that's not persistent. And you've got data disks that you can add. And those data disks themselves can be managed for the operating system. So persistent disk management, we've got capacity here. A data disk can be 1 terabyte. Is it imaging capable? And that's if you want to create a new image. The OS disk is, the data disk is not. You have to do that separately. For disk caching itself, you've got the OS disk. It's read-only and read-write. And if you have a data disk, it's not as well suited for caching. Sorry, I'm going through these a little bit quick. so that Lewis has time for his session. So I mentioned before persistence. You get three different instances of something. And the idea here, and this is just an example of Azure Storage, the virtual machine goes down, another virtual machine takes its place, or let's say you're updating. This could actually happen in a scenario when you're updating as well. Another virtual machine will take the place for that particular amount of time, and the Azure Storage itself still manages the application. So Lewis, take it away.
Thank you, Ryan. Can people hear me in the back? All right. So for the next 10 to 15 minutes, we're going to be talking about SQL Server. So everybody using SQL Server today? Yes, most people? Okay, some people. Got it. So let's talk about the different types of deployments that you can have with SQL Server today. We'll talk about how to migrate into Microsoft Azure, and I'll give you a quick demo of how you can easily do it from SQL Server Management Studio. So in terms of the different alternatives that you can have, if you look in the picture, at the bottom of the screen, we have your dedicated hardware. It is higher cost for you. You have to buy those servers. On the top, you have shared hardware that someone is providing, and the cost is lower for you. On the left side, it involves higher control, so you can have full control of those machines and those SQL servers, but at the same time, it involves higher maintenance on your side, so you have to spend more time taking care of those SQL servers. On the right side, you have less control, right? But at the same time, you have less maintenance. So first, you know, for many years, we had physical machines running SQL servers, so you had the full box, and then you have SQL Server there. Then we started building private clouds, so you will have your physical servers, and then inside you will have Hyper-V running, and you will have multiple virtual machines, and that's how you could consolidate many of those SQL Server workloads into a single in a single server, and that will basically reduce the price and share the utilization cost across multiple SQL servers. Around 2 years ago, we introduced Microsoft Azure Infrastructure as a Service, IaaS, and as part of that, we released the support for SQL Server. So you can now run SQL Server on virtual machines that are hosted by Microsoft Azure. And then after that, we have the Azure SQL Database. So in that case, that is a platform as a service. And the difference is instead of having access to one virtual machine, you have access to a database, right? So you don't actually have access to the operating system or any notion of the virtual machine. All you get is a connection string to a database. And then finally, we have software as a service where Microsoft or other third-party vendors offer some services. An example is Office 365, for example, where you can use Excel or Word in the cloud, right? So different levels of deployment, different levels of control and cost that you can have for SQL Server. And obviously, there is always the hybrid aspect, so you can always combine some applications on-premise with SQL servers running in IaaS or SQL server running in PaaS. So just comparing the two options, we see a lot of customers asking what is the difference between running SQL Server in a virtual machine in Azure versus running a SQL database. We actually released a white paper a couple of weeks ago. So let's talk about some of the differences. So in the case of an Azure virtual machine, you have access to the server itself, to the virtual machine, and you have full access to SQL Server in that virtual machine. You are in charge of anything related to managing SQL Server. So you need to go and set up, for example, high availability if you want to have it. You need to take backups, right? You need to manage the patching of SQL Server and the patching of the operating system. One of the advantages that you have is you can run any version of SQL Server. So you have SQL Server 2005, for example. You can host it in Windows Azure Virtual Machines. You can run any edition of SQL Server, so Express, Web, Standard, Enterprise, etc. We provide full compatibility with on-premise. So if today you have some workloads that are running on your version of SQL Server, You can just go and move that SQL Server into a Windows Azure virtual machine, and it will provide exactly the same compatibility. So any feature that you're using will be supported. We have many sizes of virtual machines, so depending on how much power you need, you can go from a very small virtual machine with one core and 1 gigabyte of RAM to 16 cores and 112 gigabytes of RAM, and from 1 terabyte of space all the way to 16 terabytes of space. So it will satisfy many different sizes of workloads. Brian already talked about the availability SLA. So we have an SLA for virtual machines that are part of an availability set. That means that you have different full domains. And you can always go and configure some SQL Server high availability solutions. So if you're familiar with database mirroring or always on, you can configure. And finally, one of the main advantages is if you have some on-premise infrastructure today, for example, you have some Active Directories, domain controllers that already have some policies and some Windows logins, you can simply utilize those for your virtual machines in Azure. So if, for example, your applications today are using Windows authentication and some domain accounts for security reasons, you can just go and reuse those into your virtual machine. So you don't have to go and recreate all of those logins, for example. Now, if you look at the other alternative, running an Azure SQL database, what is the difference? Well, the first difference is you get access to one database, right? So you don't see a virtual machine, you don't see the server. All you get is one database itself. The database is fully managed for you. So Microsoft takes care of high availability for the database, takes care of the backups, right? Takes care of patching, for example. So you can always guarantee that that database has the latest version of SQL Server and the latest version of the operating system. The version of SQL Server is based on the latest version. So right now it's running on a version based on SQL Server 2014, the latest version that we released. It's based on Enterprise. It's a slightly modified version to run in the cloud. So you can start contrasting the differences between running your own server in a virtual machine versus running on the Azure SQL Database platform. We don't offer today full on-premise compatibility in the case of an Azure SQL Database. We're working every day on getting that compatibility to 100%. But there are still some features that we don't support. So if you have features that live outside of your database, things like agent jobs, for example, link servers, et cetera, those features are still not supported today. That's something that we're continuously working on. And you have different sizes of databases that you can buy. So this goes from different versions. From basic, this is the smallest version, and it provides 2 gigabytes of space, and it provides 5 transactions per second, all the way to the premium database size, which allows you to store 500 gigabytes and provides almost 800 transactions per second. So this is it's a little different between virtual machines, where you buy a machine with some memory and CPU and storage, versus the case of a database where you actually buy just the size of the database and the number of transactions per second that you can run. And finally, we provide an SLA, 99.99%. So this is less than 10 minutes of downtime per month. So it's a good, definitely it's a good SLA. It's actually the highest SLA that we have in the market for databases. So how do you decide which one to use? So the general recommendation is, if you want to migrate existing applications, you're already running SQL Server and you want to migrate those into the cloud, use SQL Server on an Azure virtual machine. It works really well if you have a few SQL Servers, so you have probably less than 10, less than 20, it's still manageable. If you have above that number of machines, then you probably want to look into Azure SQL Database. Also, Azure SQL Database is great for new applications. So if you're starting a new application from scratch, you probably don't want to think about backups, patching, and all those things. So you can let your Azure SQL Database handle all of those things for you. So this is my last slide. So if you're thinking of how to move your SQL workloads today into Microsoft Azure, what are the options that you have? So trying to make it simple, if you have less than 1 terabyte of data, right, and you want to move it, you have a couple of options. In SQL Server, we already integrate these two options. One is called the Deployment Wizard, and I'll show you that very quickly. This basically takes a full backup of your database and then restores it either to a new virtual machine, or you can specify an existing virtual machine and we'll restore the backup there. The wizard is supported for every version of SQL and any edition, so whatever workload that you have today, you can migrate it through the wizard. Just a consideration, it takes some minutes of downtime, so when you start the wizard will take a full backup and will restore it into a virtual machine in the cloud. At some point, you'll need to stop the workload, right, on your on-premise SQL Server, take a log backup, right, for any new transactions that have happened since the time of the full backup, and then you'll need to restore that log backup in the virtual machine and move your connections to run there. So it's just a manual procedure that you have to do. The other alternative is to use Always On. Anybody familiar with Always On here? Just a couple of people. Okay, so Always On is the high availability solution that we released in the last version of SQL Server, or actually two versions ago, SQL Server 2012. And what this allows you to do is create replicas of your databases that are continuously synchronizing, right? So every transaction that you execute on one SQL Server is automatically synchronized to the other SQL Server. So you can use this solution to migrate, to do a live migration, basically, of your workload from on-premise to the cloud. So you can configure Always On between on-premise and cloud, and then just do a failover. So it's just a simple command in SQL. And it takes seconds of downtime. Your connection automatically moves. So if you have some clients connecting to your on-premise SQL Server, Always On will automatically move those connections, and it will continue running. Again, it's just seconds of downtime. The only thing to consider is it Always On requires a VPN tunnel. So to set up the VPN tunnel, all you have to do is configure your on-premise VPN device, or you can do it through Windows Server routing and remote access services, and then you can configure the tunnel between your environment and Azure. If you have more than 1 terabyte of data, the recommendation is to use the Azure Import service. So there is one service in Azure. You can put your database backups, for example, in a physical drive, right? And then you can encrypt it with BitLocker, and then you can send the physical drive to one of the Azure data centers. So you can use FedEx or DHL, for example. You send it, it takes around 2 to 3 days, and then after that, Azure will take your drives and put the backup in your storage account. And once it is in the storage account, you can take it from there and then restore it into a virtual machine. So those are the things. Do we have time? Maybe 2 minutes?
Yep. Sure,
yeah. All right. So let's give a quick demo. I think I am one. Got it. OK. So I have SQL Server 2014 running here. I have a database, right, called my database. It's currently running on my laptop. Let's assume I want to move this to the cloud. I want to move it. I have different options, so I right-click on it, go to tasks, and then you see here I have two options. I can either deploy to a SQL database. Again, this is the one that Microsoft manages for you. Or you can deploy to a Windows Azure virtual machine, and this is where you get the virtual machine, right? And then you manage it. So let's do the virtual machine one. So the first thing I have to do is just specify the connection to my SQL Server. So I'm going to use the local one. I'm going to move this database. And then it will ask me about a shared folder, just because it's going to put the full backup there, and then it's going to take it from there into the cloud. So I just specify the folder. Next thing I have to do is I need to connect to Microsoft Azure. So to connect to Microsoft Azure, if I have already done it before, it will remember that, and it will remember that I have a certificate that is installed in my account. So you can just look at all the certificates here, and then you can select the one that you want to use. And then, just taking a little bit of time. If you haven't connected before to Microsoft Azure, then you can always go and sign in. So in this case, I can see all my certificates here, and then I can select which one I want to use. This is to authenticate. Again, if you haven't done it before, you just click sign in, and then this will take you to the portal page of Microsoft Azure. You can specify your credentials here, and then this one will download the certificate automatically for you. I can specify the subscription that I want to use in Azure, right? And once I do that, this will automatically download all the information for my subscription. So for example, it will tell me, these are the different cloud services that you can use. Again, these are just containers for applications. I can store it in any cloud service that I want. So I'm just gonna select someone randomly. I can specify the name of the virtual machine that I want to use. So say my Azure SQL, some number. The storage account, so this is where the storage for that virtual machine is going to live. So I can specify anyone that I want. I can specify the size of the virtual machine and what version of SQL I want to run. So here I have a lot of different images of SQL Server. So the reason why I have so many is because I have different versions of the same SQL Server running. So for example, you know how we have different patches? So I have all of these patches, this is why you see so many. The ones that we have by default in the Microsoft Gallery are fewer than these ones. So in this case, I'm gonna go and use, let's say, SQL 2014 Enterprise Edition running on Windows Server 2012 or 2, right? The latest and the greatest that we have. So I select that one. I specify my administrator username, a password, and then the location. So I can provision this virtual machine in any region around the world. So it can be in Asia, it can be in the US, let me say North Europe, and then the size of the virtual machine, right? So we go, again, extra small, just 1 core and 1 gigabyte of RAM, or I can go all the way to, you know, A7, which is 16 cores and 112 gigabytes of RAM. So I'm gonna say medium in this case. I'm gonna accept here. This is gonna generate a certificate that will allow secure connectivity between on-premise and the cloud. Let's see if I can do this. The problem is resolution here. Let me see if I can change the resolution. Let's see. Let's try something else. Screen resolution, maybe. Let's see, we can, hopefully this will work. Okay, at least it will give me a space to go and do this. So after I do that, there wasn't really that much exciting thing to see. It shows me all the options that I have selected, right? And then once I click finish, this will basically go provision a new virtual machine with SQL Server and then take a backup and restore it. And that's gonna take around probably 10 to 12 minutes. So I'm probably not gonna wait here. So why don't we go back to the presentation and you can continue. Sure. Thanks, Ryan.
Thanks. Real quick, I just want to talk a little bit about some of the other options. So how many people are using NoSQL database like MongoDB or Cloudant or nobody? How about Hadoop? Any Hadoop? How many people are being told they should be running these things? Okay. I'm going to go real quick through this then. There's a few ways you can get large amounts of data onto Azure. If you're using Hadoop or MongoDB or any of these other tools, to build modern applications from SQL Server databases or any other kind of database. There's Hive, there's HBase. These are tools that you use to make Hadoop look like a SQL database. And when you do that, of course, you can load data into Hadoop as if it were a SQL database as well. There's also Mahout, which is a machine learning library that you can use to actually load certain data. Storm allows you to load data as well in a real-time environment, so allows you to bring data in from different applications in real time, so for IoT or something like that. And you can also connect Hadoop with on-prem if you already have that. Doesn't seem like anybody here does, so I'm going to skip over that real quick in the interest of time. Please ask questions at the end if you do have any Hadoop-related issues that you need help with. So scenarios for deploying Hadoop as a hybrid. So you might have something on site, or you might be thinking about using it on site, and you want to deploy that to as a POC, or just for bursting at certain times, or as a backup or an archive of your Hadoop data. Those are the three scenarios, basically, for moving on-premise Hadoop. We have a service through Hortonworks called HD Insight, which is a instance of Hadoop that you can use straight out of the box. And my machine went to sleep while we were talking there. So once again, if we go into virtual machines here, if you notice here the little Hadoop elephant, you can deploy HD Insight straight from here. I don't have any Insight clusters right now, but if I want to, I can click here. And it creates a Hadoop instance that you can start running right away, including Hive, HBase, and a few other things. It also supports Scoop, S-Q-O-O-P, which is an Apache project. Let's go in there. Apache Scoop is a quick way to get information into Hadoop. So through the HD Insight interface, that's one way to do it as well. And switch back. So if anybody does ask you, how can we start with Hadoop, you can start with an HD Insight application on the cloud without actually having to set one up on site. Hadoop is actually quite complicated to set up. It's a Java application. You have to run Tomcat. You have to run other tools, and then you add in Hive, HBase, all these other tools that are part of it, and then Scoop to actually get the data in. And to get large amounts of data, as Lewis mentioned, our import-export service is probably the best way to go. You package up a hard disk, you encrypt it, you send it to a data center, and that data center will build it for you. And that's it. We've got about 8 minutes for questions. These are some resources. I showed you the scripts. There's actually an Azure Scripting Center and a Microsoft Scripting Center. So the Microsoft Scripting Center is about PowerShell. The Azure Scripting Center is about CLI capabilities. And we'll distribute these slides as well. So we'll take some questions. No? Wow, we were good. I don't know. Maybe it's the end of the day. I don't know. That could be it. So, yeah. Any questions about anything at all? Does anyone use Debian here, by the way? Anyone have any data centers using Debian? Okay, because one of the things I was talking to some guys last night at Country Drinks, and they were saying that Debian is big in Europe. I knew that, but they said nobody here is talking about Debian, and we do have a VM Depot image of Debian if you want to use it. So vmdepot.msopendeck.com. If anybody says, hey, how can we get Debian on Azure? You can fire up a Debian instance on Azure in 2 minutes using the Debian VM Depot image and impress your customers. Anything else at all? Okay, well, we'll be around for questions if you have any, and thanks for coming, and thanks for hanging in there. Don't forget the Ask the Experts after this just in a few minutes, and we'll see you down there. I'll be down there, so if you can around and you have any questions you think of on
thank you
large data, thank you.